Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass. I'm your host, Sam, from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass.
And I'm Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
Yes, you are. Each week we get together, we talk about cars, motorsport, F1, cars. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can watch us on youtube.com/behindtheglass. Don't forget to subscribe and turn on notifications. And Tony, if people want to support this podcast, what should they do?
Watch it.
No. But also head to Patreon. You can support us on patreon.com/behindtheglass. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoy the episode. I wish that this episode was going to be dedicated to what I've been doing this week.
What have you been doing? I know you've been doing, but they don't.
Driving the Ferrari 296 GTB in Spain.
What, was it warm?
Oh, the weather was so nice.
Was it?
Oh my God, and the scenery. So we were near Seville, right, you know, basically next to Portugal, right in the southwest corner of Spain. Oh, beautiful region of Spain, Andalusia.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, weather was incredible. Locations were amazing.
Why Spain? Why not Italy?
Ha, 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 ha. Good question, my friend. This is the first international media drive that I've ever heard of, been made aware of or know of taking place outside of Italy. So I went to Ferrari and I said,
what's going on?
Why are we in Spain? They basically didn't have an answer. They were like, oh, well, it's snowing in Fiorano. I was like, have you heard of the south of Italy? like, you know, we don't have to be in Fiorano. It's all a bit, it's not odd. I think it's kind of good. And maybe this represents new era of Ferrari. Like we keep talking about, this is happening. Ferrari are moving on in life. But even the people from Ferrari couldn't remember there ever being an international media event, launch event outside of Italy.
It's quite significant. Yeah, it's huge. That's what I said. Like, why is it in Spain?
Yeah, it sounds insignificant, but it's not. It's quite a significant thing. But I wasn't complaining because, as I say, beautiful part of Spain. And so I was there filming the, you know, first drive impressions of this car.
With lots of other journalists.
Okay. And I can't talk about it.
Ah.
I can't talk about it. I signed legal paperwork saying that I would not talk about
it. An affidavit did you sign?
An embargo.
So, literally,
I think the embargo lifts on the 7th of March. So you'll all be inundated with Ferrari 296 GTB reviews at that point. I will go live a few days later because I don't upload.
So for people that don't know, viewers mostly, what would happen if you broke that embargo, if you released it before?
I would actually be liable. I would genuinely be liable to be sued by Ferrari.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that would happen. I would get about 150 phone calls from Ferrari.
Yeah.
I'd be blacklisted. I would be blacklisted from anything Ferrari related ever. And also, I would be very much frowned upon by contemporaries, so other journalists and outlets.
Your peers.
And other manufacturers. Mm. You know, because the minute you break an embargo, and especially if you break it sort of significantly, the world pays attention. Like the automotive world will notice that. And then you're not really as a sort of trusted source. So it's not a clever decision. And if you don't really know what an embargo is or why manufacturers do this, it's a bit of an old school thing, but it all ties itself to the traditional media outlets. Sort of back in the day when magazines were the most important people attending any kind of media event, so that outlets from all over the world could attend and not necessarily compete with each other. a PR team would put an embargo in place so basically everyone's content could go live from the same date. Because a lot of monthly magazines, like take GQ,
yeah,
they're usually writing 3 or 4 months in advance. You know, yeah, their sort of publishing times or their lead times are literally 2, 3, 4 months in advance.
Well, it's why sometimes Top Gear and TV can be a bit dated now, mate, because they don't film it yesterday. They film it months before.
Of course, they've got to edit it and yeah, put it into a schedule and things like that. But yeah, but traditional media, say magazines predominantly, would have those lead times. But also, if you're inviting 150 journalists from around the world, you can't invite them all on the same day. So if somebody came 3 weeks before another person, it's not really fair that their content goes out before the other person. Mm. So that's why it sort of began. And then these days it's sort of relevant because SEO, which is, you know, search engine optimization, basically if I put out an article about the Ferrari 296 GTB, even if I've got a very small website, every article that follows after that will be positioned behind me on Google.
Yeah.
If you search 296 GTB, my article will come up first because of that's how SEO basically works.
Yeah.
So again, to sort of try and not give any one outlet that advantage, PR teams put these embargoes in place. They're not ideal. They're frustrating. For those of us who, you know, want to see 296 GTB content, it means that usually on one day, suddenly 10 videos get uploaded. And
well, that's
like,
the thing, isn't it? It's not ideal for you. It's ideal for Ferrari because they're getting loads of content all at once.
I disagree.
Do you think it's bad for them as well?
I don't think it necessarily matters. I think it's ideal for magazines and websites.
Right.
That's who it's fair for.
Okay.
For Ferrari, they're going to get the coverage and the content anyway. And actually, rather than one big spike, it's better for them to let it bleed out. You want a big spike at launch, but you want continuous coverage.
Yeah, but they do. They will get continuous coverage, especially with the digital platforms now, because people watch them a year later. That's the whole point of inviting you guys now, because it's there and you watch it whenever you like. So, they'll probably still get the initial spike and then it's drip fed as the years go on.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, the main advantage is to the more traditional magazines and websites, as I say. So that's fine. But yeah, you're going to have to stay tuned. And what's going to happen is hopefully...
When's it coming?
So I said 7th of March is the embargo lift. My video will go live a couple of days after that. Because, you know, I like to be, you know, pick up the scraps. but hopefully that week we're going to try and get Shmee 150, Tim Burton, who was on the launch event with me, to come on the podcast so we can both chat about it in more detail, share our thoughts and talk about the experience. Anyway, I wish that's what we were talking about. It's not. What we are going to be talking about towards the end of this episode is my new daily. Finally.
Wait, so what? So we're going to talk about it and then you're going to put a picture up?
No.
No?
Hold on. Don't overconfuse me. At the end of this episode, finally, I will be revealing my new daily. We're going to talk about some topics, how I ended up choosing it. Some patrons have made suggestions of what they think it might be, et cetera, et cetera. And then I will reveal it.
That's a cracking car, by the way.
Oh, that's very kind of you to say. And then on Sunday, a main channel video will go live revealing the car properly. Because today I'm going to tell you what it is, but I'm not going to tell you everything about it. And then on Sunday, if you really want to find out all the details, the main channel video will go live. But that's to come.
Right.
So back
that's
to
at the end.
Yeah, that's the end. Right. Back to Ferrari. Whilst I was in Spain, some pictures ended up on the internet.
I know, I saw them. And I was tagged 300 million times. It was you.
Yes.
My whole inbox was, look at this.
Because supposedly, and still unconfirmed, so that's why I have to say supposedly, but we all know it's basically the car, the Ferrari FUV, the 4x4, the SUV from Ferrari, was leaked, the Puro Sangue, or whatever it's being called. Pictures emerged from what it looked like on the Ferrari factory line of this kind of silvery grey car.
Colour didn't do it justice at all.
And the wheels were disgusting. Yeah. But, you know, it kind of went viral. And I say Ferrari haven't said anything yet. No one's officially come out and said, yeah, that is the car. But
someone's been sacked for sure.
Someone has definitely been sacked. There was a little bit of a sort of panicked look on most of the Ferrari employees.
Was there?
Yeah. It all kicked off as we were standing together. And then suddenly they were on phone calls for the rest of the afternoon and slightly stressed. So not a great day for them. Which, you know, as I say, pretty much confirms what we all think, that is the car. I'm assuming the official unveiling of it can't be that far away if we're seeing a sort of what looked to be a finished production model on the line.
Yeah, like I said, we both just said the wheels and the colour didn't do it justice. I think the final car with a proper set of wheels on it in a proper colour, I think it will look fine. I think it looks good from the back. less so from the front, but I think it will be rules and colour dependent.
For all we know, that was a design study that was being used as a shell of a car that's going off for sort of final viewing from the design team or from the board or something like that. So this is why we can't really sort of say that that is the car. You know, those wheels could have been slave wheels. There's too much that we don't know yet, but fundamentally we've had a bit of a glimpse as to what this car will look like. And if you match it up with some of the spy shots, the car driving around in camo, it kind of makes sense. The same with a tail lights as the 296 GTB. Front end that looks like a mix between the SF90 and an old Lusso. Because this is more of a crossover than an SUV, that's the, you know, so it's called the Ferrari utility vehicle rather than the sports utility vehicle. Classic Ferrari. You know, it's not supposed to be necessarily a Bentayga rival or a Urus rival. It is supposed to be basically a jacked up Lusso.
And not the first time we've seen a car like this, or we've seen a car unveiled and people think, oh, that's disgusting. Urus, new shape M3.
720S.
720S was a real one. Remember when we all
Bentayga,
saw that?
Bentayga. First gen Bentayga.
I actually really like the look of the newer Bentayga now.
So nice.
Especially like when they've got the black pack on them and the right wheels.
Yeah.
So
lovely.
People get you. It's just change, mate. People get that's used always, to them, you know?
And, you know, to keep it with the 296 GTB for a second, even though I'm not supposed to be. It's the same with that car. I can't decide. It's some... Sometimes I think it's absolutely stunning, and sometimes I see an odd angle and I'm like,
no, I
maybe
like
it's a
it.
Bit funky.
From what
yeah.
I've seen, I think it looks pretty, that car.
Yeah, but it's what you said, that, you know, new design language sometimes takes a while to get used to.
It does,
to.
Yeah.
But yeah, so theoretically, we now know what the FUV from Ferrari is going to look like. We still don't know the name. I know a little bit more about engines. I don't think I'm allowed to say again. I haven't actually signed anything.
Well, can I say what I think I know?
Yes.
And then you can say nothing.
That's a very good idea.
So I believe there's a V6 coming, petrol car, with some hybrid technology, I guess like the 296. I believe there's a V12 coming as well. And a diesel. No, there's not a diesel.
Interesting thoughts there, Tony. Yeah.
And I bet there'll be an electric one. I bet at some point there will be an electric one.
I don't.
Mate, there has got to be at some point.
Why?
Because, well, what are Ferrari excluded from making electric vehicles?
Yes, and so they should be.
Well, they're not, but I agree.
I think they are because of the number of vehicles they produce. I think hybrid helps them get away with their emissions and stuff, doesn't it?
Yeah, but what about when 2030 comes?
Mate, 2030 is not coming. So, here we go. Boom! This is what I'm so excited to talk to you about, because I don't think you know about this yet.
Oh.
While I was on this launch, I was there with some, as you say, real credible journalists. Henry Catchpole from Carfection, Rory Reed from Auto Trader, Jason Barlow, Top Gear, GQ. A whole load of real big, heavy hitter journalists.
Mm-hmm.
So I find it really fascinating to pick their brains and talk to them about things. And obviously we're there driving and reviewing a hybrid Ferrari, a new era for Ferrari. And that naturally moved the conversation on to, you know, what is the future for companies like Ferrari, and what do we all think about electric vehicles and hybrids and things like that. Little did I know, and I'm ashamed that I hadn't seen this or picked up on it, Rory Reed has done a fascinating piece over on Auto Trader based on a report that Volvo released. And Shmi 150 has also now done a piece about it, based on the fact that he's basically swapped his Taycan for two V12s. He's gone out and bought a Lusso and a DBS, I think. So he did a piece about this as well. So I've pulled up the report because it is absolutely fascinating. And bravo, Volvo, for conducting this report and releasing its findings, because it's actually not that positive. They've tried to put a positive spin on it, but it's not that positive. The title of the report is Carbon Footprint Report, Battery Electric XC40 Recharge, and the XC40 Internal Combustion Engine. So these are basically, Volvo build the XC40 on the same line, whether it's a battery-packed car or a combustion engine car. All the components are pretty much the same, apart from...
The running gear,
yep. Exactly. And what they wanted to understand is... how green, or how much greener, or how many fewer emissions is the recharge, the electric car, in compared to a combustion engine car?
Mm-hmm.
Is this really the solution that we want to be chasing? Because mm-hmm. as we've spoken about quite a lot on this show, and is now sort of becoming more and more discussed, are electric cars really that green?
Well, it's becoming more and more discussed because more and more people are buying electric cars. Now, I think they're buying them because I think, like 20 years ago, when we was all told to go and buy diesel cars by the government, we're all being pushed to buy electric cars. Now, the governments have a history of doing this, and doesn't mean it solves the problem. And now, I don't know what you're going to say, but I've got a really good idea what you're going to say. And this will back up, hopefully, unless I've really put my foot in it, what we've been saying for quite a long time.
I think you're going to be thinking the right thing, but I think you're even going to be surprised at how much this rubber stamps.
Oh, this is the best day of my life.
Now, the caveats I will say is that firstly, I will agree and admit that it's still relatively early days in the production of electric vehicles.
Yeah.
You know, lots can change and lots is hoping to change. We've been making combustion engine cars now for donkey's years, so we're very good 100 at
plus
it.
Years.
Exactly. But you're so right. The global pressure from a governmental level is to go electric.
Yeah.
This seems to be the kind of agenda. And good on Volvo, as I say, for doing this report and looking into it. I have had to skim read it. I did chat to Rory and Shmi about it. So I may have missed a few key details, and feel free to go and read the report yourself, or more realistically, go and watch Rory's video over on Auto Trader. But headline figure for you. Okay. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
So an XC40 combustion engine car over its lifetime, which I think was based on around 150,000 miles, so 200,000 kilometres.
Okay? Normally around a 10 or 15 year lifespan in general cars have.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Will put out around 58 tonnes of CO2 emissions.
Yeah.
Okay? Based purely on the global current sort of electric production. So, you know, we're using a lot of fossil fuels here in the UK, for example, to actually create electricity and charging network. An XC40 recharge will be 54 tonnes. So just Yes. 54 tonnes. So it's 4 tonnes less than the combustion engine car.
Okay.
Now you go, well, great. It is. It's less. It's a cleaner way to go about it.
Yeah.
And you're right. I think it's definitely nowhere near as much as you would maybe think or suggest. But the more interesting fact is when you dive down into the production or the manufacturing emissions versus the actual road going emissions, because it's so carbon emitting to manufacture an electric vehicle, they start at a massive deficit.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, there's a break-even point where an electric car becomes greener than a combustion engine car. If you go on basic current global electricity production levels, that break-even point is 146,000 kilometres. So for the first 146,000 kilometres, a combustion engined XC40 is greener than an electric XC40.
Okay. Now, that is surprising even for me to hear that. I knew that the grass weren't always greener, excuse the pun. I knew that for sure there was going to be some other bits that we are not seeing as consumers. But for a car to be, I'm just trying to break this down from a professional point of view. So a combustion engine car, 140,000 odd kilometres, right? Mm-hmm. So that's some 90,000 miles, maybe 100,000 miles, roughly.
Yeah.
85,000 miles.
Around 80, roughly. Yeah.
Okay. If that's a small car, that's worth not a lot of money at that point. And so are we saying the electric car, once it gets to that point, don't forget, batteries are not going to last forever as well. So there's also going to be a point where when you scrap a combustion car, it gets scrapped and that's the end of it. It goes to a scrapyard and it gets recycled as well. As far as I know, You can't do that with a battery. You can't just scrap a battery. There's different ways and pollution ways because of what it gives off.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and I only know this because I know someone very high up in Audi, and they said that when electric cars are going to get, you know, when they really catch on, there's going to need a point when they get to eight. I think I told you this before. When they get to 8 or 10 years old, and the batteries are becoming to the end of their life, there's going to have to be a compound where they're going to have to go and sit for a while before they can do anything with them.
Yeah, I mean, I think fundamentally batteries can be volatile towards the end of their lives.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's thoughts going into this. It's definitely not a hidden secret that after 8 or 10 years, it's expected that any vehicle, current vehicle battery is going to be not performing as well. This is like an iPhone battery. Over time, it does deplete.
Of course, like an engine though, mate.
Exactly.
It's the same.
So yes, you're right. There's going to be a chance that these vehicles may need to have their batteries replaced, which will then add to their emissions because the creation of that battery produces carbon to then, you know, slot into the car.
Yeah.
So my question for you is then, what's the average mileage, do you think, per year of a car like an XC40?
Well, the average mileage is around 12,000 miles a year. It used to be 10, but it's around 12 now. But people still do say 10,000 miles a year, roughly.
So we're looking at maybe 6 to 8 years for an XC40 owner to have amassed around 140,000 kilometers, potentially. But we know that realistically, when somebody, if they're buying a car new, and this is what we're looking at here, after 4 years or maybe 5 years in the UK, they're probably going to be changing.
It's loads less than that. It's like 26 months.
Fine. So that's the average ownership?
Correct.
Okay. So again, you know, but that car will then hopefully move on. But higher mileage examples, less demand for them for sure. You know, if an XC40 combustion engine car's up at with 60, 70,000 miles on the clock, it's not that an attractive proposition.
Mm.
So what I'm trying to hit at here is that as we're approaching that break-even point, firstly, there's the question of, will the recharge need a new battery? And secondly, how many XC40 combustion engine cars or recharge cars are going to be getting to that point within private ownership of that break-even marker? 146,000 kilometers. That's a very long way to go in an XC40. In an electric version, which at the moment, you know, you can only do 200-300 miles at a go.
Yeah.
Or a combustion engine car. You know, that's a high, I know, you know, we've got Volvos from 1990s that maybe have done 150,000 miles
or more.
But they're 15, 20-year-old cars.
Mm.
So my point being that it's a huge amount of miles that need to be covered before
you even break even. And that as well, like I said, when cars get to 7 or 8 year old, things start to break. Now, with a combustion engine, which you definitely can't do with a battery, when a battery's gone, it's gone. It's finished. You need a new battery. So a battery on an electric vehicle will be 8 or 10 grand, for instance.
Do we know that?
No, we don't know, but I'm just
that
saying.
That sounds a hell of a lot.
It's not going to be 500 quid like you can get a recon engine. Do you know, this is what I'm trying
sure,
to say.
Yeah.
There's
an inherent cost associated
when
as well.
When a car gets to 8 or 9 years old, and cars are miles better than they used to, you know, they go on. But the general consensus is the government likes cars in this country to be around 10 years old. That's why there's all these charges, congestion charges and stuff, and people that
ULEZ that run
really old cars, they get really penalised because they're emissions, obviously. So when you get to a point in a combustion engine car, it's throwaway if it's broken, because they things wear out. But if you don't want to throw it away and you don't live in the town, you can easily repair it for not a lot of money. So with an electric car, and I don't know for certain, but I know for sure that the batteries won't be cheap, and you can't refurb the battery. You need a new one. So the car's going to be throwaway at 7 or 8 years old. And then at that point, we're exactly level with a combustion car, but a combustion car with a recon engine can go again.
But also the fundamental point here, which is what the report is looking at, at that point, the combustion engine car will have emitted less carbon.
Yeah.
From its manufacturing point to the point that you are at, it is the greener option.
So
at that stage.
Are you taking manufacturing for both of them into consideration?
That
as
is
well?
What this study looks like.
Good.
This is purely on manufacturing.
Right.
Because that's what I was saying. That's why there's this break-even point.
Right.
That's why the electric car starts with such a deficit, because it's got to make up all this ground
Fair.
To get to that break-even point.
Yeah.
Because of course, when you're on the road, the electric car is emitting way less emissions, but it's still taking such a long time to break even with the combustion engine car. Now, just to give a bit of a positive spin on this, that was based on current global electricity production methods.
Yeah.
Now, EU28, I think, is the goal for Europe to produce electricity in a cleaner way by, what, I guess 2028, isn't it, I suppose? Mm-hmm. Based on that sort of plan, it's around 84,000 kilometres would be that break-even point. So that's still a pretty hefty way to go.
Still at that point, mate, like I just said, when a car gets to 80-odd thousand miles...
Well, no, so that's kilometres, so 50,000-odd miles.
50,000-odd miles, okay. Yeah. So, well, that's better.
It's better.
Yeah.
It's better, but that's if we can achieve EU28's goal of cleaner production of electricity.
Yeah.
And then the ultimate sort of story, which is maybe more Volvo's aim with this, is that if we're on the cleanest production of electricity, so wind, then it's only 47,000 kilometers is that break-even point, so about 20,000 miles.
Okay.
So if globally we can produce electricity only from wind for charging these vehicles and also to help with the production side of things as well, then it is a much quicker point at which an electric vehicle makes more sense. The problem is we are not there yet, and we are very far from
miles away.
So right now, in this moment, it is actually a greener decision to buy combustion engine. Which
good.
But the problem which we've got is if all of us listen to this and go, right, okay, well, that makes sense. For the next 5 years, I'm going to keep buying combustion engine because it's a greener choice. Do manufacturers keep pursuing electric with the hope that the world...
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Ford is going to produce greener electricity and make that break-even point come down, so that then, by the time we get to 2030, if these regulations are still in place, we only have to drive an electric car for 20,000 miles before it's actually become the greener choice over a combustion engine. That might even be less. I mean, who knows? The production sort of methods may change, and it may be just 10 or 15,000 miles until you're driving the greener choice. That could all happen. That definitely could happen. But fundamentally, right now, we're actually polluting the earth more buying electric.
Yeah. And as well, we haven't got to the stage yet where we've got to dispose in these electric cars, you know, because they're not that old. You know, what about, we already know about a combustion car, what it takes to scrap one of them and whatnot. We don't really know about the electric.
The getting out
when they've come to the end of their life. And they do. They're machines. They will. They're not going to last forever. And I think they're going to last less than a combustion car. And even if they do last longer, once they're finished, they're finished. It's like your phone, once it's off, it's off. You can't switch it back on. And there always becomes a point with everything battery powered, it just won't hold a charge anymore. And like I said, I go back to it. When an engine's finished in a car, you can refurb it. You know, most people, they've got an engine, unless it's a Ferrari engine, that don't happen, but you know what I mean? A normal combustion car, you can recon an engine for hundreds of quid. That is not going to be the case for a battery car.
Well, it's not currently. We don't know. Because they are going to keep, you know, developing this. And there is still so much ahead. That's why, you know, I don't want to see this as the final nail in the coffin for electric. I'm not necessarily suggesting that. What I'm suggesting is that, as we've kept saying, right now, it's not perfect. And so this sort of global propaganda or this agenda to force everyone into electric, for manufacturers to have to be building electrics. And you said a second ago, surely there's going to be an electric Ferrari FUV or some vehicle coming soon. That's because of government pressure from around the world.
Yeah.
It's not because it's necessarily right now the greener choice. Now, as I say, Volvo published this thinking that they'd found a positive spin. They weren't coming out to say, guys, we're giving up on electric. So the way that they summarize their key findings is the XC40 Recharge has a lower total carbon footprint than the combustion engine car for all analyzed electricity mixes. That is a good point. I think the problem which they've highlighted is how close it is and these fundamental break-even points. The carbon footprint of a combustion engine XC40 is 58 tons, while the footprint of a Recharge is 27 to 54 tons, depending on the electricity mixes with varying carbon intensity in the use phase.
Yeah.
When considering the emissions from the materials, producing an XC Recharge and its battery pack results in roughly 70% more carbon emissions than a combustion engine car.
Okay.
So it's 70% more emissions to produce the Recharge. And the battery is a larger part of that. It's about 10 to 30% of the actual total carbon footprint is just the battery.
Well, we already know that a battery is really polluting to make. We already understand that. We knew that before. We don't know. We didn't know the percentages we do now, but we knew that it was a lot.
A lot. I mean, you know, as I say, and this, if anything, points towards what Shmi's just done, which is, you know, used cars, you know, they're already here. You know, so great big hunking engine used cars, they're already here. So the cost to the earth has already existed, and actually driving them for a little bit longer, whilst you are of course emitting more than an electric car that is also on the road, that deficit is, it's a different comparison to look at again, because the break-even points are even different, you know, from a brand new electric XC40 to a 10-year-old V12 Ferrari. What's that break-even story?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I thought this was fascinating. As I say, I only had a chance to skim read this because I literally got back from Spain last night. Please go and check out Rory and Shmi's videos or check out this report. I'll try and put a link to it below. It's volvocars.com. It's literally on their website.
Is it actually on the website?
It's on their website. It's a really, really interesting, you know, story and analysis. And I say, I'm going to read more of it this evening to try and understand more of it. But yeah.
I mean, it will improve, mate, because that's the problem is like I said, and I remember 20 years ago when everyone said go and buy diesel cars, that worked out well, didn't it? But, you know, these manufacturers are under huge pressure from governments globally to sort this out. You know, they've all signed declarations that they're going to be carbon neutral by 2070 or 2050, or they haven't all signed it, by the way, but a lot of them have. And they're under huge pressure, and it will get better. But like we said before, I think there's another solution. There is another way, for sure.
Yeah, and you look, we're not naysayers. I know some of you get upset with how much we sort of bash EVs. I actually really like a lot of the electric vehicles I'm driving right now. I still think the infrastructure needs to improve. I'm not here to say I never want to be in an EV. I think in the city, they make a huge amount of sense.
Yeah.
But we're trying to do our best to maybe sort of pull back some of the curtains on some of the information you may be receiving. And fundamentally, you guys are all very clued up. You're all petrol heads. You all know what you're talking about. You probably consume a lot of automotive news. So you're going to all be well-educated in this topic, but we do feel like it's our part that when we find out information like this or when we're told it, that we want to share it with you so that you can make your own choice, because we both get questioned so much. We get DMs, emails. Yeah. Oh, I'm thinking of buying a Taycan, or maybe I should just buy a Panamera plug-in hybrid, or should I just go? So we get these questions a lot. So that's why we're trying to do this. We're not here to every single week saying electric, or maybe Tony is, electric's crap. That's not the aim. It's just about presenting some of this information to you and sharing our thoughts on it.
Yeah. And I think I've said this before. I've never said it's crap. I said it doesn't work for everyone. So it doesn't work. That's all I'm saying, you know. And when everyone says to me, when shall I buy an electric car? Shall I buy one next year? I always say, when you've got to, in 2030, or whenever they move the goalpost to next. Because an infrastructure, as we know, is a huge part of the problem. And we, as human beings, are only going to be a small part of saving the planet. We're all going to be dead meat by the time, you know, we're doing this for generations.
I mean, the planet will probably survive, but we as a human race might not.
The planet will 100% survive.
Figure itself out. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. And I think you said this to me before. The planet's not the problem. It's the people.
Yeah.
We're
making ourselves extinct.
Correct.
We won't have food. We won't be able to grow our own food, as we're seeing around the world, fires and floods and extreme weather conditions. Yeah. We're making it harder and harder for the human race to survive on this planet. So we have to do something.
Yeah.
Absolutely have to do something.
Yeah.
But when you see a study like that, which is basically saying that up until 140,000 kilometers or however many years that would achieve, an electric car is actually producing more carbon emissions.
Yeah.
That's when we have to raise the flag and say, hold on a sec, guys, aren't we all aiming for the greater good of saving the human race and trying to ensure that, as you say, generations after us can continue to enjoy this incredible planet, like the southwest of Spain, like I've just been in now. You know,
yeah.
Parts of the world like that will only survive if we all come together. And according to that report, all of us going out and buying electric cars is going to make this planet worse.
Well, yeah, you're right. And also as well, there is always, there's this other thing. I mean, it's always motorists that get picked on as well. It's a percentage, but it's a small percentage. And you know, they have to do something. The carbon emissions for cars around the world is 5 or 6% of the, it's tiny.
Of the actual transport emissions, yeah. Because
it is tiny.
Ships, you know, transport, cargo
aeroplanes,
ships, airplanes, you know, all
they're
these
the biggest two, right?
I assume so, yeah. I mean, cargo ships for sure right up there.
Yeah.
Airplanes must be.
Yeah.
But it's because, you know, cars are part of our lives, very relatable.
Yeah.
If you're a politician or if you're a campaigner saying cars are polluting, we've got to get rid of cars, everyone sees them. We all own cars. We all use cars. They're right in front of you. You can understand it. When was the last time we went on a cargo ship?
Oh, it's not just that as well. It's loads easier, isn't it, to convert, to change
something
the
that
car.
You can do. I can help out. I can go buy an electric car. So, yeah, it's going to be a continued debate on this podcast for years to come. So if you're bored of it, I'm sorry. But I do think that this was a fascinating and interesting topic. So I'm glad we got to discuss
Speaking
it.
Speaking of cargo ships, by the way, did you see that one that...
Oh, yes, we probably should talk about that, because that was the other thing I got sent loads of. I got sent 400 links to the Ferrari FUV and 500 links to a cargo ship on fire with what on board?
Porsches.
No!
Luckily, they weren't coming here. But just going back to your battery analysis, imagine if that was that
there
cargo
must be,
ship.
But there must be some Taycans on there.
No. But imagine if the cargo ship was powered by batteries. Oh. I mean... It would be, we'd feel the earthquake here.
I mean, it wouldn't float, to be fair. So it never would have started. But if it was a hydrogen boat.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds like a bomb as well, doesn't it?
Oh, mate.
I mean, because these boats do catch fire. But yeah, this was a really mad news story, which is not the first time this has happened, I have to say.
No.
But a cargo boat carrying a whole lot of Porsches to North America, wasn't it?
Going to America.
Yeah, just caught fire. And then because the crew had to abandon the ship and then it was floating in the ocean for a start. It was then basically anyone's taking.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like weird maritime rules because it had been abandoned. Anyone could just walk up and claim it. So I saw similar tweets be like, right, come on, boys.
Let's go and get a Porsche.
I just got a Speedo from, an inflatable boat, dinghy from thingy. Let's go and get a Porsche. But yeah, I mean, God, if there are delays on ordering new Porsches for North America, God knows what those delays are like now.
Well, that will, because obviously they're all still made in the same factory. They're just left or right-hand drive. It will affect orders globally, mate, because, it's still another 1,100 cars they got to make.
And exactly.
They're going to have to make them quick because them customers. So even the right-hand drive market, if not it doesn't matter because we're right-hand drive and we're left-hand. It does matter because your car's not going to get made, their car's going to get made.
That's exactly it. You're going to get bumped down the line. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm absolute disaster one way or another. It was always why I was so nervous shipping my car during Drive the World.
I'd have done you a favour, could you fire that thing?
How dare you?
But it was green.
It was amazing. Carrera T. I missed that car. I still look at them, I have to say.
Do you really?
Yeah, but no matter how much sort of reassurance the company, I mean, it was cars, so they're really one of the best in the business, and what the best, they're like, we cannot control Mother Nature. If a tidal wave comes, your car is in the ocean and not coming back.
And it's insured, but...
Oh, yeah, but for me, that was...
good.
If the car was at the bottom of the ocean, I was like, that was me done. So anyway. But look, well, a nice segue is that if we're talking about the fact that right now it doesn't necessarily make sense to buy an electric vehicle, that is really solidifying my choice to buy a big hunking engined of a new daily.
You can't even say the engine?
No. I can. Okay, well, so yes, look, let's get into it. A thing that I've dragged out for far too long. I didn't actually mean to drag out this My Next Daily series for this long. I mean, it's been, I think, nearly 6 months. When did I do that first video?
It has absolutely been six months.
Yeah, it's a joke. And I'm sorry for all of you. I mean, let's just explain the reasoning behind that very quickly. Firstly, when I kicked off the series, I hadn't actually definitely decided to replace it. Like, I went up to Alexander's as a bit of a joke, thought, oh, actually, maybe there's something in this, titled the video Hunt for My Next Daily, with no real plans to follow it up, and then it became this thing. Anyway, so I dragged it out for too long. There was a part of me which was like, oh, well, those first two videos did do quite well on YouTube. So, you know, as a business, maybe I should, you know, do a few more of these kind of videos. But as I say, was not in a rush, hadn't decided what I was doing. So I realized that maybe it was a bit tedious after a while.
You didn't know what you was buying until like 3 weeks ago.
Literally 3 weeks ago. I have been going back and forth, and I've been boring Tony and Paul so much with this decision because, as you all know, and as I've explained in a very recent main channel video and on this podcast many times, the X340i was fundamentally a very hard car to replace. So you might be going, well, why did you replace it? Because I wanted to. Yeah. I wanted to, and I think...
You had it a couple of years, didn't you?
I had it a couple of years, and it just, you know, I hadn't had that emotional connection, and I wanted something different. And I saw... in the video that I posted sort of reviewing my time with that car, a few comments saying, oh, you know, what the heck? Like, how can you get rid of this car? Most people would dream of owning a car like this. But it's everyone, firstly, lives their own lives.
And, of course.
And everyone is free to make their own decisions. It is my car. I think some people had assumed it was a loaner or some crazy lease and that lease had run out. It's not. It was a PCP car. I bought it from BMW, financed through BMW UK. I think I mentioned before it was costing me like 400 quid odd a month. And because of the crazy and insane used car market, I basically sold it for what I bought it to Tony. Thank you, Tony.
Did you?
Yeah.
No, I already know. I knew
that. Yeah. So long story short, you know, it all made sense. And yeah, I don't know why I'm defending myself. But anyway.
Well, it's why you were sitting there for 20 seconds defending yourself and justifying why you're having to buy and sell a car is exactly the same reason why I don't post my own personal cars on social media anymore.
Okay, fair enough.
Because I am not a YouTuber. Why should you, even being a YouTuber, be dictated by anyone for you to drive? You should be able to drive what you want. They drive what they want. And it absolutely infuriates me. And actually, it infuriated me then just listening to you having to justify and explain yourself why you've sold your car, your own car. And then when you buy a new car, you have to justify and explain why you've bought a new car.
Which is what I'm about to do. But
oh, my God.
But no, I do understand it. Because if you're sitting at home and you're in a 15 grand car and you're very happy with it, but you're desperate to move up to a 30 grand car, and then you see a YouTuber switching in and out of a car that you think is amazing just willy-nilly, it must be a bit frustrating.
Do you go to work?
Me?
Yeah.
Yes.
You work hard?
I like to think so.
Right, so the person in the 15 grand car that's got the amp, go to work harder. Then you can have a 30 grand one. No, that is it, mate.
You sound like Molly May now. Just, you know, we've all got the same 24 hours in a day.
Yeah, but you work hard, mate. So you deserve a nice car. And your next car that you're about to announce is fairly expensive and people are going to go in on you. It's not right, mate. They don't understand the work that you have to put in.
But also,
it's not free.
Fundamentally, people can do what they want.
Of course they can.
I think the thing which maybe is hard to understand, which is, you know, for me, before I got into YouTube, I changed my car. Actually, I changed my car a lot. What am I talking about? I genuinely changed my car a lot.
Some you buy people, piles of shit in general. That's why you got to change when they run out of puff.
My A6 4.2 V8.
Executive saloon. What happened there?
I owned it for 6 months.
Did you really?
Yeah, thought I was going to do an RS6 conversion, but that's not a thing. So.
An A6 4.2 V8.
Yeah, blue with grey interior. It was like a executive salesman spec.
An A6 or an A8?
A6. A6.
V8 petrol.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
Did about 4 mpg in London.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so, you know, funny how the world works. Long story short, there is no need to justify it. You know, people can change the cars
absolutely
they like, and it's just taken me a while to figure out what I wanted to do. So, as we spoke about, I did really toy with the idea of an FF for half a second. That was pretty serious. You know, I came into the beginning of this year thinking...
You went to look at one, mate.
I got one inspected down at Furlonger, Absolute Legends at Furlonger. I had a look over one.
Bloke's still there now.
No, actually, it was a very nice car. But as nice a car as it was, it still needed like eight grand's work. The FF needs 10-year old charging and all these different things.
Yeah, yeah.
And fundamentally, as I announced when I started this whole journey, my daily is just that, a car that I'm going to be using on a day-to-day basis. It needs to be super practical, super comfortable, loads of space, easy to drive, all the comfort, all the tech. I would love to go out and buy an old 90, I don't know, like an Audi RS2 or an old Merc C43, like I would love that, but it's just not reliable, and you know, so
it's a newer car.
Yes, no one's going to be surprised that.
This is exactly right at my street, because the other day, before you reveal it, because I'm just trying to drag it out a bit so they're watching. The other day, I was driving around the motorway as I do in my brand new car, and I saw a V6 R32 Golf. And it made a lovely noise as it come up the side of me. And I thought, I remember them. I really, really liked them back then. Mm-hmm. And then like literally 25 seconds later, I thought, that is literally just a bag of trouble. Yeah. Like,
but that's the thing, you know, it's tempting. Like we're car guys. Like there's lots of cars like that I would love. And, you know, there's also that sort of side of me that thinks, oh, you know, heck, screw like comfort and practicality. But no, I need I want a practical, usable, comfortable day.
Yeah.
So before we do the grand reveal, I got the patrons to send in a load of suggestions because I think people are going to be very surprised by this because I surprised myself.
And me.
Yeah, and you. So let's just see what some people are suggesting. Tom Collier with a Julia QV. I'm pretty sure Tom's got one, so I think that's why he's suggesting
Good car though, Tom.
Great car.
You've never liked them though.
I really liked them. I wouldn't own one because of the infotainment system, and I wanted an SUV, or I would have considered an estate, but I need that tailgate for Twiggy. Can't put Twiggy in a boot.
It's the size of a coffee.
No, but you can't shut her in an enclosed boot.
My dog goes in a boot.
No, it's a tailgate. You're on an SUV. What I'm saying is you can't in an enclosed boot.
Yeah, I know what
so
you mean.
So I needed a
saloon. You couldn't have a saloon.
Can't have a saloon, exactly. You'd probably have a hatchback.
Yeah.
Lawrence Baldwin in with the Macan GTS, called it the greatest car on the earth a couple of weeks ago.
It is one of.
Can't get the new ones. I did genuinely look at it, and Alexander's Prestige did actually have one at one point. But for all the reasons we've discussed, it couldn't quite.
I understand, mate.
It was tempting. I was tempted.
Yeah, it's a great car. Yeah.
Great car. A lot of people, Goran Sokolic, one of the people that mentioned F-Pace SVR, and I actually think so many people assume I'm getting F-Pace SVR. Redlack 700, F-Pace Primiano Bubico, F-Pace SVR, Alex Newshape F-Pace SVR, Matt Pickford F-Pace SVR,
that's false.
Adam Sidaway F-Pace SVR. So many people thought F-Pace SVR. It's not an F-Pace SVR.
Why didn't, because so many people thought that, and it's your affiliation with Jaguar, of course. Why did you not go for an F-Pace SVR?
Because I've got an F-Type R.
Okay.
now, fundamentally, that F-Type R is not mine, it's Jaguar's, but they don't want it back. Like, I keep trying, I'm like, guys, and they're like, no. Like, they've actually stopped replying to my emails about that car. But also, as people know, there's plans for F-Types and Jags on this channel. And what is the point And definitely right now, running an F-Pace SVR alongside an F-Type R.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people are saying, well, that ticks off many boxes and then you can go and buy a Porsche as your sports car. I sort of got that argument, but as awesome as the F-Pace SVR is, I say, if I'm going to have the V8 Jag, I think I want the F-Type.
Okay.
So that was the thinking there. Lucas, I'm not going to pronounce that surname of yours. Gulumbauskas?
Oh, no.
Where's that from? Go on, Lucas. Panamera Sport Turismo. Half a second, I did look at Panameras.
And you actually, did, yeah.
Abdullah said Panamera GTS. I don't know why, but if a Panamera was Taycan size, I'd be all over it. But there's something about Panamera just a bit too... Anyway, something about Panamera.
No, you can't say that.
you know why I can't say that. I was about to say it's too big, but I'm going to shoot myself in the foot soon. I don't know. Panamera, it never quite happened for me. Every time I looked at it, it never quite happened. And you can get the plug-in hybrids, Turbo S and stuff like that, relatively cheaply on the used market in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, boot space is not quite as big in a Panamera because it slopes down. So, you know.
You can look at the Sport Turismo, but which is very good looking. But
yeah.
I don't know.
The boot space is still not.
If I'm getting a Porsche, I want a 911.
Yeah.
That's my whole thing. Like, if I'm getting a Cayenne, Macan, Panamera, I want a 911. That's the Porsche
Cayenne's
I want.
Cayenne's a very good car. I had a Cayenne Coupe for a while. Do you remember that car?
Yeah, it was a very good car.
I loved that car, dude.
Jack Curran with all the banter saying BMW 2 Series Active Tourer. Would have been a good prank on you, all I have to say. Harrison Maxwell with the BMW iX, a car that I'm really, really excited by, but no, I wouldn't be buying electric for all the reasons we just discussed. Ed Boyce, along with many other people, saying, what about the new X3? And before the FF decision and at the end of last year when I came back from Dubai, I text you all because I was actually about to put a deposit down on a green with tan X3 M40i, the latest version.
You was, yeah.
Which I think ended up still coming to Dick Lovett in Hungerford. At the time, it wasn't a physical car and I inquired and they were like, well, we don't even know if it's coming or not. We could try and put a new order in, but you can't actually put in the BMW
individual
colour. So
yeah.
Long story short, I ended up getting a bit of a panic on, ended up seeing the car physically, thought it was gorgeous, but yeah, that very nearly happened. Paul Cohen with Audi RS4 Avant. No, looked at those as well.
Good car.
They were good cars, but interesting on finance. So obviously, you know, my next day was all going to be walked through Magnitude Finance, and I used their calculator endlessly on the online calculators. Oh, that's interesting, isn't it? And an RS4 was kind of looking at like 10 grand in, about a grand a month, which, you know, you're like, okay, that's sort of, you know, that's interesting-ish. But when you're at that level, suddenly lots of other things become very affordable.
Yeah.
You know, for a little bit more or a little bit less, you can get loads of other stuff. So the RS4 suddenly a bit too expensive.
Yeah.
Charlie Horsfield hoping for a Stelvio. Nope, I've said many times before, ain't going to be getting a Stelvio. Wayne Horton, Alpina B5. Okay, so talking about finance calculators, Alpina B5 Estate, very cool, essentially the M5 Touring. Insanely expensive to finance.
Yeah, it's because of residuals.
Yeah, because there's like no residuals in Alpina, so that was coming out at like 1,700 quid a month. Or
was
like
it? Just, was it really?
Yeah, terrifying.
Yeah.
And let's just see this. I mean, lots of you
guys. That is terrifying.
Tom Smith with a Defender 110 or a Range Rover Sport. Christopher Lee with a Yaris. Just a standard Yaris, he's saying, I kind of think a joke.
And I did say to you at one point, why don't you just get a Range Rover Sport? And you just said, oh, it's too predictable.
It was like my dad. I just feel like my dad. Every time I drive them, I just feel like my dad.
Yeah.
That's the problem. As great as they are, he's always had them. I just feel like my dad. Simon Kidd in with the Porsche Panamera. Carmen Scott with the
X5.
X5 45E. Yeah. I think a lot of people saw X5 coming. It's not an X5.
Yeah.
I sort of never really took X5 seriously.
Great car, though. Great the X5. Car. Flipping hell, what a car.
I don't know why I sort of didn't really take it seriously. I was just a bit like, didn't take it seriously. So people have kind of tapped into the things that I was considering, but actually not one Patreon suggested the actual car.
Really?
Not one Patreon.
Oh, you've done good. I wouldn't reveal it if I was you then.
Billy Perkins, the Defender 90. Nope, not
because it's going to be a really, really good surprise for people.
Actually, sorry. James Scudder has got it right. James, I feel like I should send you a hat.
A hat?
James has got it right. On Sunday, the full reveal, because this particular car is fairly unique. I'm about to tell you the make and the model, but the specific car needs to be seen. Would you agree?
Oh, it needs to be seen, all right.
Yeah. And this is where we'll end it. So I hope you've enjoyed the episode. I'm going to have really clickbaited this with the title saying "My Next
Really?"
Day. It's going to be in the last 20 seconds of the episode. If you want to follow Tony, he's at Tony Crawford Car Sales on most social media platforms. I'm at Seen Through Glass. We'll be back with you next week when we can talk more about my new daily and Audi RS6.
Ooh.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.